Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. This retreat is done to commemorate the enlightenment of Shakyamuni Buddha. Training is always about the practical, what we ourselves actually do, rather than the theoretical. Obviously, different types, there are different types of minds, and some people get caught up more in the intellectual or the theoretical than others. I myself started out as a very intellectual person. I had read everything I could possibly find on Buddhism. This was very helpful to me at that point. It urged me on, it inspired me to continue, and it also prevented me from wandering off in strange directions. Although there actually wasn't much opportunity in Newfoundland when I was growing up for wandering off in strange directions. So, we commemorate the enlightenment of Shakyamuni Buddha. We commemorate an event of more than 25 centuries ago. We are not commemorating it in the same way as somebody remembers an historical incident that occurred a long time ago. We are commemorating it through our meditation and training during this week. When the Buddha was alive, as Kazon says, he had the form and figure of an old monk. Sometimes visitors who went to see the Buddha had to ask which among the various monks was Shakyamuni. And at one point, somebody pointed out, you see that monk over there? Was a little bit shorter than the one standing next to them. Oh, well, that's Shakyamuni. And there were also plenty of times where people ran into him and talked to him without realizing who he was, that he was the person that they'd heard about. In the Soto tradition, what's called the mandala, as it were, of the Soto tradition, or the official picture of the Soto Zen tradition, shows Shakyamuni Buddha seated in meditation with Dogen and Kazon below and on either side. And although Soto Zen altars throughout Japan and other places in the world have all sorts of images on them, which isn't a problem. But the main official one is Shakyamuni Buddha sitting in meditation. That is the historical person who is the inspiration for our training, as well as the person who taught all those many centuries ago. It is not a question of trying to reconstruct 25 centuries ago. And this is very important, and people sometimes attempt to do that out of a type of fear that if they don't get it exactly right, they will miss something. And there can be a great deal of discussion over what exactly was the practice of Shakyamuni Buddha, etc., etc., etc. We can know for ourselves how people trained 25 centuries ago by training ourselves. we can know what they ran into in their koans. We can know what obstacles they encountered. And we can also, through our own practice, understand the scriptures. But the scriptures can only really be understood through our practice. Sometimes the scriptures are descriptions of particular things, but always they are aimed at practice. I saw a thing not very long ago about the whole useless thing that people get into as to whether Buddhism is a religion or not. And the person said, and River Master Jihu definitely said it being a religion. The person writing the article said, well, whether or not it's a religion, it's a practice. It's something that you actually do. And the winter retreat commemorates that. When Shakyamuni Buddha sat underneath the Bodhi tree, he was entirely by himself. So when we sit in the hall, we are each person sitting individually, but we have the advantage that we are being supported by others, by members of the Sangha. In the same way, actually now that I think of it, many of you would be sitting on your own, supported, as it were, by the merit of the wider Sangha. It is a common Western koan to which we have inherited out of our Judeo-Christian backgrounds to become despondent and look down because of the distance of 25 centuries, because we feel at a distance from training, because we feel at a distance from other trainees and teachers. And of course, it is the wonderful, one of the wonderful things for which we have to be really grateful for, that we can, through this particular type of medium, that is the Zoom, actually have contact with one another. It's kind of funny, we don't have to develop huge things about telepathy and all the rest of it. We just have to turn on the computer in order to communicate with people. We just turn on the computer and there we can see one another. So we, through this means, we practice together. There is no less merit and support from the Sangha through this way. We are supporting one another by our presence and by our participation. As I said, I was and still am a very intellectual person. That was the way I was oriented. So I'd read lots and lots of things about Buddhism. I read, and I don't think this is a vain boast, I read every book in the local, in the Memorial University on Buddhism. I went through them systematically, one after the other, over the period of years I was there. I didn't have any friends to speak of, so I used to spend all my spare time in the library. When I went to Shasta, one of the things that, having read all that, was helpful for was I recognized in Reverend Master Jiu and what she taught the same teaching of Shakyamuni Buddha that I had come across in the early Buddhist scriptures. And also, as a result of this reading and study, when Reverend Master Jiu spoke for the first time about what was subsequently written up in How to Grow a Lotus Blossom, it did not frighten me as it did some people, okay, who were present. It did not frighten me. As a matter of fact, I was very, very grateful because I had read about these things before, particularly in Nagarjuna. So as a result of the knowledge, this was useful. And also, after I became a monk, what Reverend Master Jiu taught was quite different from what I had read in the books. Because it was based on practice. So what I had learned was actually quite useful, but I had to let go of it. Letting go of it meant that at a later date, like now, it can actually be quite useful again. If you see what I mean. Because I'm able to talk about the scriptures and not simply say that I don't know what's about. So what I'm saying is anything can be made use of. As long as one is prepared to put it aside and look at things in a new way. For example, I'd read lots and lots of Buddhist history, but what Reverend Master Jiu was talking about was not what the scholars were saying, because it was based upon what people actually do. That is why, or one of the reasons why, when I've talked about people who were practicing during the Buddha's lifetime, it gives me a great deal of joy to talk about them, because I can think of people I know in the present time who are very similar to them. Now, all of you have probably heard one of my favorite stories of a woman during the Buddha's lifetime who had, listened to the Buddha teaching and had practiced as a result. That practice, no doubt, included keeping the precepts, cultivating a generous mind, which would have been very big for her. And one day, she was cooking. Sometimes when people read Dogen's work on the chief cook, they think that Dogen is talking about all sorts of special practices, etc. But Dogen is also pointing back to people like this woman. She was cooking. She put some greens on. She wanted to parch some greens. So she put them in, I guess, a wok-like thing. And as you do, she was trying to do all the other things. There was no problem in what she was doing. But, the heat in a wood stove or whatever you want to call it would not be easy to control necessarily. And the vegetables didn't simply parch. They burnt. They crisped into charcoal, as sometimes, these things can do from intense heat. Because She was paying attention to what she was doing. Because she let go, had been trained to let go of her ideas and opinions of the circumstance when it occurred, and not to run off, become flustered, or to blame somebody else, as some people often do, or blame the equipment, then that incident became an opportunity to go deeply into training. And as a result of that incident, her actually entire life was transformed. The way that is described in the scriptures is that she had insight into impermanence. And we tend to think, oh, they have insight into impermanence. They recognize that time passes. And as Dogen says, time passing has nothing to do with impermanence. That's not what it's about at all. Rather, impermanence has to do with the flow of our training in the middle of things as they are. That is the meaning of Uji. That is, all being impermanent in the usual way of, you know, time passes or time flies, well, that's simply as it is. There's nothing we can do about it. We do not need to have an intellectual understanding of it for it to happen. It just simply is. It is whether or not we even understand it or think about it or cogitate on it or pay any attention to it. But the importance of what is being tried to point out is the flow of training within it, the application of training in stillness. Now, as I said, what did this woman do when she was doing an ordinary household thing? She was obviously that she had practiced precepts, okay, which are very, very important. It's also obvious that she had practiced generosity of spirit, which is the sometimes called the first principle of Buddhism, is the generous mind or the generous heart. She was doing what, quote unquote, an ordinary task. She wasn't doing anything like working on koans or engaging in or engaging in elaborate visualizations or anything along those lines. She was doing what we are always teaching people to do, to pay attention to what they're doing. To pay attention to what is going on in daily life is actually the same thing that we talk about nowadays. This change for her was quite profound. So profound, actually, as I told the story before, so profound that when her husband came home, he immediately recognized that there had been an entire inside-out change in his wife. And she no longer had any interest in continuing the family life that she had been doing up to now. It didn't make any sense to her. So she renounced the world. This does not mean that everybody who is insight into impermanence renounces the world. It is just that when somebody has insight in that way, they have to, They have to be true to it wherever it leads. And for her, in her particular case, it led in that direction. And her husband did as well, for that matter, inspired by his wife. Because it's an example of the appearance of training in, as I say, in the middle of ordinary daily life. Another one of my favorite stories is a woman who was a servant in this wealthy household of one man had several wives. They were co-wives. And also, of course, there would have been ladies and things like that. And this person I'm talking about was a hunchback. And when her employer used to give her money to buy flowers for the house, she would go and find a cheap place to buy flowers and pocket the rest of it. One day, as she was on her way back and forth from the market, she heard and saw Shakyamuni Buddha, who was teaching, and she stopped and she listened to the teaching. She became aware for the first time that what she was doing was taking that which is not given, or stealing, if I can put it that way, and so she went to her employer and told her what she'd been doing. As a result, the employer's respect for her and trust of her increased. The women of the household, for whatever reason, could not go out and attend the Buddha's teachings. I don't know why exactly. Maybe they thought they were too hoity-toity, if you know what I mean, to mix with ordinary people, you know, all the various motivations people use. And so her employer asked her, this woman, to go and listen to the Buddha's teachings and bring them back, bring back what she had heard, and to teach the women in the palace or wherever it was, house. And that is what she did, resulting in deep insights occurring among the women of that household. After this woman had passed away, the woman I'm referring to, years later, at one of the Buddhist councils where they were gathering together all the memories of the Buddhist scriptures, the people she had taught came forward and recited what they had heard from her, what Shakyamuni Buddha had taught on those particular occasions, and those were incorporated into the Buddhist scriptures. This is somebody living an ordinary life who actually is remembered 25 centuries now. And at one occasion, the Buddha was asked how many among the lay people at that time had attained to the way in various ways, Somebody said something along the lines of dozens or whatever, and he said, no, hundreds, and more than hundreds, in all sorts of different ways, who have practiced and realized the truth of practice for themselves. So that is also what we commemorate during this retreat. And you will find the same thing throughout history. Down to, I showed people a picture, I think last time, of Nyogen Zenzaki in 1920 with a group of women from his Zen group. Western people have been practicing the Dharma for a long time. There were the Greeks, of course, in King Ashoka's time, And those of you who would have heard of the discovery of that Buddha statue earlier this year in Egypt on the Red Sea, which of course confirms the historical records that people were practicing it there. It's a statue of Shakyamuni Buddha. It is made out of local marble carved in Europe. The marble, I think, is from Turkey. So people have been practicing, so it's important to remember that. What we are doing is not something new and strange. We are walking in the footsteps of those who have gone before. I sent around at a certain point a list of links to, in particular, women practitioners, women Western practitioners, so that people could see it. The fact that we are able to practice now is due to these people. When River Master went to Japan, there were Western women who had already been there and practiced Zazen. There was another one who had been a prior, as it were, of a temple. So this is not something new or strange. And, neither is it something to be, taken lightly. One of the four principles of the Soto tradition, as I said before, are Shoku Shinze Butsu. All beings are at heart from the beginning Buddha. That means all beings have the Buddha nature. This is expressed in the Pali Canon as our essence of mind is intrinsically pure. It is just covered over by defilement. Shikantaza, that is meditation without grasping or pushing away. Meditation done without a theme. Precepts. The understanding of precepts as things we do with our body and mind in order to train ourselves, rather than being a set of externals which, if we follow, define us. And the fourth one, which always surprises people, gratitude. When Monson Dohaku says, as long as bowing lasts, Buddhism will last, he means gratitude. When we bow during morning service, when we bow to the altar, when we offer incense, when we sit, we are expressing gratitude to all those people, like the women I referenced, who trained themselves. They were not, some of them were special people, some of them were quite courageous people. But many of them were quite ordinary in all sorts of regular jobs who applied themselves to training. As Dogen says, it is not the depth or shallowness of the teaching being given. It's the depth or shallowness of the training of the person. Because the Dharma is not some esoteric philosophical understanding of the way the world works. The Dharma is something that this is the way things actually work. So if we apply ourselves to meditation and training and letting go and precepts, we come to understand what the Dharma is much more than any professor of philosophy who studies it through books. That is what it means to know for oneself. Skin, flesh, bones, and marrow. On Sunday, we will be doing the Festival of the Buddha's Enlightenment to commemorate that event 25 centuries ago. Are you 26 by now? And the continuance of that down. The great compassion of Shakyamuni Buddha that caused him to leave a very wealthy, well-to-do, comfortable life because he wanted to find out how to help people with their suffering. That was his motivation. When he discovered that, which his parents had been keeping from him, when he discovered that people got sick and old and died and suffered, he wanted to do something to help those people, and that was his motivation. When it says Shakyamuni Buddha sought the truth, he sought the truth about the cause of suffering. He wasn't seeking the truth of some sort of abstraction. When he trained under various people and learned forms of meditation, it was with the motivation of helping beings with suffering. And even though, after the Enlightenment, for a moment he thought, maybe this is too difficult for people to understand. Okay, because it involves not some sort of elaborate thing done with the mind, but the letting go of selfishness and the training of selfishness. Many people find that difficult. But simply because the Buddha thought that for a second does not in fact make that true, and that's an important part of it. It is in fact not true that people are incapable of understanding this, as is shown by our presence here. The Dharma has been transmitted down many generations, not because it's an abstract truth, but out of compassion for sentient beings. Reverend Master Jiyu, going to Japan. Bodhidharma, following his master's advice to cross the Great Sea to China, which took him 3 years. Because in those days you had to wait for the monsoons. So, you go to, I think it's Indonesia, you spend a while there. If you're from India, you study Chinese there, you used to in the ancient times. Another way around. Out of compassion for beings. And it is important to remember that. That is what Kanzeon is. And why Kanzeon, Kuan Yin, Kanon is so important. Because it reminds us and teaches us about compassion. Reverend Master Jiyu used to say, too many people approach the Buddha Dharma and practice in the West without compassion. They become rather consumed with the idea of some sort of intellectual goal. If there's no compassion, then there is no understanding. It is also compassion that causes people to, for example, the whole business of the ordaining of women in the various schools in Buddhism, all having to do with compassion. the whole tradition in Buddhism of regarding how you treat animals. Matter of fact, in this same place they found the Buddha statue, there's an animal cemetery. None of these archaeologists seem to have cottoned on about the possible link. They just find it. They say, well, there's no known animal cemeteries anywhere. In Egypt, there's mummified remains. That's a different matter. But somebody has buried pets in this animal cemetery. That sounds very Buddhist to me. And they're likely, to my mind, to be the only people likely to do that. So much of scholarly not understanding what the Buddha Dharma is about is because of the lack of understanding of the importance of compassion. Compassion, as Dogen says, compassion is flexibility, openness, allowing things to be. Uji, that major writing of Dogen, if you look at it and you think this is about compassion, it will make sense to you. Homage to all the Buddhas in all worlds, homage to all the Bodhisattvas in all worlds, homage to the scripture of great wisdom.